Now, speaking of cigarettes and their bygone appeal, here's an adventurer whose smoking was vital to his image as a cool, laid-back hero. Hubert Latham received public acclaim as one of the brightest stars of aviation in the early 1900s, but nowadays his name means very little to most people. For his story of heroic endeavour, I'm joined by historian Dr. Barbara Walsh, who recently brought out a book on his life and untimely death. Now, Hubert Latham, Barbara, he was wealthy, he was charming, he was good-looking, he was a traveller, a sportsman, an aviator, but tell us a little bit more about his background. Who was he?
The Latham, or Latham as it's called in French, were an English family, probably came over with the Normans, but had gone back to France and set up as mercantile traders. And on the mother's side of the family, there were bankers to the royal family, in fact, you know, very top class people. He spoke English accentless, he went to Oxford. He also spoke perfect German. And there was a grand aunt who was the mother of the German Chancellor. Now, all these factors came to play when he became to be puffed as the perfect man to be the first man to fly the English Channel.
Now, okay, but there's a story attached to that. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. But before he flew the English Channel in a plane, in 1905, he made his mark, I suppose, in aviation with a record-breaking balloon trip across the Channel. Tell us about that.
That's right, yes. It was with a cousin of his. I mean, they were all interrelated, these people. Cousin of his made the fastest balloon from England, from the Crystal Palace, landing outside Paris. And he became famous, and all the salons in Paris were open to him.
His next achievement was to win prizes as helmsman of a motor launch Monaco Regatta.
That's right. I think he was a young man at those days, you know, fast cars and fast women. And he was asked, would he pilot this Antoinette engine, which was being experimented on, and he won prizes in Monaco. And the same engine then was starting to be developed as an engine for an airplane. Mm. But he went away in the meantime to Africa.
Yeah, he went from Sudan into what was then Abyssinia, now Ethiopia, to collect specimens, basically.
That's right, yes. He was officially accredited by the National Museum in Paris, sending back specimens, and has travelled with porters, dined with the Emperor of Ethiopia.
Naturally, as you would.
And fell foul of him for shooting a couple of his elephants. I mean, his life is just full, absolutely chock full of extraordinary adventures, which he kind of tossed away as just, c'est la vie, or something like that.
Okay, now we're coming to the period, I suppose, where he begins to become more associated with aviation, and he returns to Paris in 1908 and is invited to learn to fly this monoplane. And the monoplane has this engine, this Antoinette engine that you were talking about. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, well, of course, they were terribly brave, either fearless or foolhardy. They went up in these glorified
kites. Those magnificent
kites.
Men and their flying machines.
Exactly,
they went up
yes.
to the up-top, they and went down up, to the up-down.
They were made of canvas and almost string and sealing wax, but not quite, but certainly one of his accidents was due to a fuel line that had been taped up with a bit of insulating tape. Now, could you imagine anyone going up in the air with something that stuck together with a piece of insulating tape?
Yeah,
anyway, but he took to it naturally. And of course, coming back to your cigarettes, he was the first man to put ashtrays right beside his controls in his airplane.
On one occasion, at least, when he had crash landed, he sort of bided time, waiting to be rescued by, you know, sort of smoking in the cockpit of the plane.
That's
basically.
Right. He put his feet up to keep them dry. He was landed in the English Channel and he lit a cigarette. Now, I mean, fire at sea. I mean, there was probably fuel all over the place, but, you know, sang froid.
And he actually has the distinction, does he not, of having completed the world's first landing of an aircraft in the sea. Now, I presume we're talking about a crash.
A crash.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit of a misdemeanor,
right.
You know. Yeah, he came down, he glided down, landed on the surface, and like that, just sat there waiting for them to pick him up.
Now, he made a couple of attempts to cross the Channel. His next attempt was in July of 1909, but he was pipped at the post by the famous Louis Blériot, who is a name who would be far more familiar than Hubert Latham.
Yeah, and this is where we come into the interesting side to this story, because there were politics in the background and shenanigans going on, because Latham, with his German connection and his English and French, he wasn't fit for purpose, although he'd been puffed by Lord Northcliffe in the Daily Mail. He'd been made a hero. But then they discovered these sort of mixed ancestry, and they decided, no, they wanted a full-blooded Frenchman, family man, solid sort of person to be honoured. And there were various strange things happened, even to the extent that when they didn't wake him to get up in time to fly, when he was ready, they wouldn't let him. They didn't want him to get any of the honour, which is rather strange, but none of this would be in the official record.
Was he the first man to fly a plane backwards?
He was blown backwards, I think, in Blackpool. But, I mean, there again, he flew in front of the Tsar's cousin, and he was called the Kingpin Man-Eagle in America. And at that time, they were practising war things. Now, he wasn't keen on the commercial aspects or the war effort, but they were certainly practicing dropping flower bombs down the tunnel, the funnels of battleships, and he scored a bullseye.
And he also used to do, I suppose you could call them stunts. He hunted wildfowl from an airplane to win a competition in Los Angeles. But also in 1910, he was offered $5,000 to fly over the city of Baltimore. What was that all about?
Well, that was a rather strange thing. There was an elderly gentleman in Baltimore who was a millionaire, and he had never seen an airplane, and before he died, he wanted to see one. He couldn't leave his sick room. So he said, would Latham like to fly over the city? Now, I think this was the first city ever in America that was flown by an aeroplane. So Latham obliged and circled around his house, and the poor gentleman saw him fly.
As you say, he also mixed in interesting social circles. What was the relationship with Eileen Gray, with the famous furniture designer Eileen Gray?
Well, she certainly got to know him after the balloon flight we spoke about earlier. And she came to watch him fly the Channel, and she was on one of the boats that escorted him. And she was certainly a close friend. And then he went to the Orient afterwards in his travels. And I'd say he was tracking down Japanese artefacts. And, you know, he was very interested in art. I say one of his famous quotes was that there's no beautiful art in Abyssinia. He went to look for it, he couldn't find it. But he said it's the art of man that makes him superior to animals.
Tell me about his violent and untimely death. He was still a young man, he wasn't even in his 30s, in a remote outpost of the French colonial empire. What was he doing in Africa?
Yeah, that is really very eerie, and one of the reasons why he hasn't been remembered, I think. The company with the engine that he was flying went bankrupt in 1911, but in the meantime, he'd been asked by the French colonial office to go to the Congo on a mission of which it wasn't disclosed. Now, that was always said. But I think he was investigating the radio telegraph system. They were trying to set up communications, and the only way to travel that way was to go from Brazzaville by foot and canoe all the way up for months on end to reach Chad, where they wanted to set up a radio tent. But he had a lot of troubles. I was very fortunate that his original diary, handwritten in pencil in his little tent every night, I was given access to. And the stories in that would be quite extraordinary. I mean, it was a military zone. And he wasn't a bit pleased with what he found.
Now, the official record says killed by buffalo. You would perhaps dispute that.
Well, he went out to hunt a buffalo that night. He had wounded it. But his guns ended up across the border. They went missing. I don't think when you put together the official report, it doesn't add up. And the man who translated the natives' account was a man he'd dismissed for stealing.
Do you think he was murdered?
I think he was murdered, and his family think he was murdered, but you won't find that in the official record, and that's the sad thing.
Why has he been forgotten?
Because Blériot was the hero, the Wright brothers were the other heroes, and they have remained in the public mind, in popular culture, whereas a lot of others like Latham, but he had such an extraordinary mixture of interest and philosophies that I think he's worth remembering.
Barbara Walsh, thank you very much indeed for joining us and telling us about Hubert Latham. And Barbara's book, Hubert Latham, Forgotten Aviator, is published by Odyssey. He's there on the cover, complete with his signature cigarette in his mouth. And that's all we have time for this week. Check out our website for information and pictures relating to the items on this evening's programme. Join us next week when our offerings will include food and the First World War, as well as the centenary of Comin' the Mon. Until then, for me, Miles Dungan, and producer Yeti Redmond, goodbye and thanks for listening.